Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio,
on WGR.
Hour number two of Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR. We've got a lot of Bills predictions in so far. I think 50 was too high, Corey. I think we've got like 8 right now.
We got time.
A third. We do have time, but we're a third of the way through the show. We got guests in this hour, but you could tell Corey we're gonna keep him busy. Give him a call at 803-0550. Tell him off air what you think, and we'll get him going. We're not having anyone deviating though from that 9 or 10 wins. We got 1-12 win prediction. Someone said 9-6-1, which, you know, how do you predict a tie? The last time the Bills have had a tie, I think, was in the 60s. I got to find that. Anyways, more on Bills versus Jets tomorrow. Sal Capaccio joins me now on the Wester Hotline. Sal, how pumped are you for this game? It's exciting that we're only 24 hours away.
I am. I'm excited that we're having football again. I'm excited to be a part of it again. I just, every time I think of it, it hurts me so much. There's not going to be any fans there. It really does. And yeah, it just kind of cuts. But you know what? Football's back. That's cool. And I know the majority of people aren't going to the game anyway. You know, you get 70,000 people there. But most people are going to watch from their homes. Millions of people will be watching all across the nation, all this football everywhere. That's pretty cool, and it's nice to have it back.
Yep. And it's Jets again, and it's kind of an interesting measuring stick. I know Mike Shope has talked about it through the week that this is maybe the easiest game on the Bills schedule, and broke down a little bit of the early part of the schedule with a couple of callers in the first hour. And I don't know if I've thought about it yet or if I just haven't spent time thinking about the early part, but when you have the Jets, the Dolphins, the Raiders, like some of these games in the early part, even the Titans and Rams, I mean, those are your tougher two games of the first five. And I would maybe think the Bills will be favored or close to be favored in both of those games. So with the tougher back half of the schedule, like Sal, 4-1, like I don't even know if I would take 3-2 in those five games, given what the Bills' expectations are to start the year.
You know, I've been listening to some of your callers and, you know, what you've been talking about with the team and the schedule and stuff like that. And, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because we just don't know what all these teams are. And one of the things that struck me was, you know, how people have called and said to you, like, well, they have a tougher schedule this year. Sure, they do on paper. I mean, but I think if we've learned anything over the last several years or ever, it's that you can't base a team's schedule and season on what other teams did the year before. There's way too much fluctuation that happens in the NFL. For example, sure, the Bills have a tougher schedule outside of the division on paper, but what about in the division, New England? New England is clearly not the same team they have been, right? I mean, right, doesn't that account for something? That's two games right there that you might give them a better shot to win. Are the Rams maybe really as good as people might have thought they were last year at this time? There's a lot of teams, I think, that you could just kind of go back and forth on and say those things about. So I agree that, you know, the schedule looks a little bit more daunting, but the Bills are also a better football team, and that has to account for something. So it's important for them, no doubt, to get off to a good start. I think this is the kind of game against the Jets this week, though, where, you know, you have no excuse, I think, to not beat the New York Jets. Sure, crazy bounces could happen. Weather could play a factor. It's going to rain some tomorrow. I get that. But the Bills are a better team than the Jets. They're at a better spot right now in their in their growth, I guess you'd say. The Jets are kind of figuring it out, and the Bills need to get off to a good start. And I think that they have an opportunity. They have an opportunity, at least, to really, you know, maybe win three of their first four, if not all four of their first four games.
Yeah, Sal, more on this game tomorrow. I want to spend most of the time with you on Bills versus Jets. And Nate was in an interesting Twitter interaction with people yesterday on whether...
Well, there's a surprise.
That's true. And it wasn't anything like silly. It was like, would you take a close victory against the New York Jets? Like, similar to last season, maybe the game script goes a little bit different, but you win by one or two or three points. And that's a question that I've struggled with, too, because a win is a win, and that's what we'll hear if they do end up in a game like that where it's close with the Jets and they come away with the W. But, again, this is one of your easier games on paper, and if you're going to progress from last season, and you're going to be a better team than last season, and with all the turmoil the Jets have had, and coaching would play into this, I would think, with no preseason, like, who would you trust more without a preseason to prepare for week one? Sean McDermott's staff or Adam Gase's? So there's so many check marks to me in the Bills category from where they're coming in from the offseason that I would feel hesitant to just sign up for a close victory at home against the Jets.
I understand that. And I think if that happens, there's going to be a lot of questions. You know, it depends on how that close victory happens. Is it a low scoring close victory? And then people say, well, where's this offense they're supposed to have? If it's is it a high scoring one, which is, oh my gosh, is the defense not going to be as good anymore? And what happened to the defense? So I think people would have a lot of questions. People would be calling the overtime show and the show after the game, the post game show, and they'd probably be more, you know, feel, okay, it's a win, but we didn't really look that good, and I'm not really feeling that confident. You know, to me, look, I thought last year these teams were pretty similar going into week one, but I thought the Bills had the better roster and the better opportunity to win. They go there, and what happens on the first drive? The Bills just march it right down the field, then Josh Allen fumbles. And what happened later in the half? The Bills, Josh Allen throws a pick six that bounces off Cole Beasley's hand. Suddenly, you know, the Jets are up, what, 16-0 at one point, 16-3. And you're like, oh my gosh, those kinds of things can happen, right? The Bills could dominate the game in a lot of ways, but you could have mistakes. This is week one. This has been no preseason. You never know where there could be a mistake where someone just didn't have enough reps mentally or physically to be able to make the play they're supposed to play. A bad pass gets tipped, goes the other way for 6 points. Suddenly it's a new game. And let's remember last year how much the kicking game played a factor, Joe, which is, Kari Vedvik missed a field goal and an extra point for the Jets. The Bills have a rookie kicker making his debut in what's going to be probably breezy, wet conditions. And, you know, that always could play a factor. So, yes, I agree with you. Although I would like to pull back the reins a little bit and say, look, if they win the game like that, it's one game, opening game. There's a lot of factors that have to decide all football games. So I wouldn't be really kind of like really concerned over anything just yet.
Mm-hmm. Sal, I wanted to ask you about Zach Moss versus Devin Singletary. I wrote actually on our website yesterday, for fantasy football purposes, to maybe avoid both of them until you really see what the split looks like. Unless, I guess if you had both, which is probably pretty rare, and if you started both, you're probably likely to come away with one of the two having a good game. But I'm preaching caution on the fantasy front because I just don't know, and I don't think anyone really has a good way of knowing what the split will look like at the start. I would think because Zach Moss sounds like had a pretty good training camp, and it sounds like it will be at least some sort of split that will be anywhere near 50-50. Maybe it's not exactly 50-50, but I would think it's not going to be dominant in Singletary's on Singletary's end. And then I look at last year, where Singletary, I mean, the carries were very low at the beginning. He was used more almost as a pass catching back in week one. He had 4 carries and he had 6 targets. And I wonder if something similar will happen this year where they'll take it slow with Zach Moss, especially with no preseason right out of the gate.
You know, I thought that would be the case, Joe, but, you know, after watching him in camp and listening to Brian Daboll and Sean McDermott talk about him, I think that they're ready to use Zach Moss, you know, in a regular role. I don't think, though, he's suddenly going to supplant Singletary as, I guess, the number one or lead back. I do think it's more going to be more, though, however, a 50-50 type of situation early in the season than I thought it was. Like, if you would have asked me this a few months ago, and plenty of people did, you know, what did you see? What would you see? I would have said, and I did say at the time, I think early in the year, you're probably looking at Singletary getting the lion's share and then Zach Moss cutting in as the season goes. I think we might be there a little quicker, but it's not because of anything Devin Singletary does wrong. I think they're just really good complements for each other. I think the Bills want to have really good options in the backfield. And then on top of it, Maybe they just go with one hot hand 1 week or another hot hand. And I think really what Brian Daboll is going to do is design a game plan that attacks each team differently, which is maybe it's Singletary against the Jets this week because you think, you know, their linebackers won't be able to get out to the edge as much and their interior front is good, so you don't want to, you know, try to go up the middle like that on them. Maybe next week it's the Miami Dolphins for the exact opposite reason. I'm just using examples here. We don't know how all of that is going to play out. But I think that the Bills are going to have, you know, what is true, obviously, is the Bills have a good situation with two young running backs that they have on contracts. I think that they can kind of play out for a long time here without having to worry about it. And I think that's been the model that they've wanted to have.
Yeah. And I wonder about Allen's part in the rushing game, too. There was some chatter maybe last week about him wanting to run less this season or become more of a pocket quarterback and not rely maybe on the running as much. I wonder, though, more so about like in and around the goal line, because he's so good at running inside the 10, and it's not always scripted run play. Sometimes it's just he drops back to pass, there's nothing there, and he's able to run it in. And that's why his rushing touchdown total has been what it is through the first two seasons. But now that Zach Moss is here especially, I wonder, and what your thoughts are, if they do want to lessen the hits on Allen and lessen the risk of him getting injured by, when they get in and around the goal line, starting to hand it to the running back instead.
Yeah, maybe. I hope not. I hope that they allow still, you know, Josh Allen to take advantage of a weapon, basically. They have a weapon. And I think Brian Daboll understands that. You look at Josh Allen, he has some of the best percentages of runs for touchdown in the game, in the league, in the red zone. You know, he's very good down there. But a lot of that's designed runs. You know, it's mostly designed runs. It's not really scrambles. Yeah, there's been a couple scrambles here or there. There was one in Dallas, remember? Even the first 2 weeks last year, he had one against the Giants, one against the Jets, right? But a lot of it is designed sweeps. There's been some quarterback sneaks in there. I love what they did against Cleveland last year, which is where they spread the field. There's nobody home in the middle, and Josh just goes up the middle, and Mitch Morris is there lead blocking because it was clearly a designed run. That is a weapon. What I think is if the Bills don't do that, they're kind of neutering Josh Allen, and they're not giving their offense the best chance to win. But you also do have somebody in Zach Moss now, I would say more than Devin Singletary, who can give you maybe more of an opportunity for him to turn around and hand it off and not have to take that unnecessary hit. So it is going to be a balance in how, you know, they want to play that.
While we're on the red zone, I'm very happy, by the way, that like last year, whenever Allen's in, it doesn't seem like they go to that fade pattern very often. I'm a big proponent of not doing that. And I don't know. I can think of one fade pass that they made last year, and I'm pretty sure it was Matt Barkley to Zay Jones somewhere at the beginning of the season when Allen went out. So otherwise, like I'm happy with what they've been doing when they get in around the goal line, and Moss can add to that, but I just hope that they're not throwing, you know, up to Diggs is an improvement though, so maybe I shouldn't go away from that completely. While we're on the receiver position, I just mentioned Diggs there. I don't know if you saw this, Sal. I tweeted it yesterday. DraftKings Sportsbook has his over-under catch total at 3.5. And I don't think there's anyone in their right mind, at least especially here in Buffalo, that would think that he's not going to get more than 3.5 catches. It could happen where he doesn't, but Sal, last year, John Brown against the Jets, like the new weapon that they had, he had 10 targets, he had a great game, and I just can't imagine that they're not going to throw the ball to Diggs after spending a first-round pick enough to where he gets 4 catches.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, you bring that guy in, pay that price, not only are you want to justify that, and there's a reason why you do that. And I don't want it to be, when I say that, I don't want it to be like you're reacting like, well, we paid this price, we better get in the ball. I think you paid the price because you plan on getting the ball. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, you did it on purpose because, hey, we got plans for this guy. We're giving up a lot because we know we're going to use him. I think that's been the philosophy all along. And on top of that, he's really good. I mean, I've been out there and watching, and I'll tell you, Joe, I mean, Stephon Diggs is as good as advertised. When you hear about his feet and his route running, like, he's a special player. When you're out at practice watching him, there's not many people who I've seen come through Orchard Park and training camp, St. John Fisher, whatever, who I can put in the same boat as just standing out like that, because Stephon Diggs is certainly one of those players. But now, to me, what happens is you really put John Brown in the role that he's more suited for, which is the number two role. He was a fine number one wide receiver as far as numbers. He broke 1,000 yards last year. He had all these straight games with, you know, what, 4 catches over 80 yards or something like that. The guy had a really good year. But truthfully, he's more suited to be a number two because when it comes time to a big third down, a play towards the end of the game, remember, we saw it against Cleveland, we saw it against Baltimore, teams are going to slide their coverage. They're going to really try to take away that guy, and then who do you else do you have to throw to? Well, guess what? Now the other guy is John Brown to throw to, because if a team takes away and tries to take away Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen has a lot more options.
Couple of personnel-related questions I got for you, Sal. One is fullback, and it's not that they even use the fullback position on every snap. I think DeMarco's snap share last year, I don't have it in front of me, but it was somewhere around like 20 to 30%. For those snaps that DeMarco is not in, I mean, Gilliam is the first guy that I think is mentioned because he was listed as a fullback, but Brandon Bean last week said that he's more of a tight end. I guess more of a tight end could still mean he gets snaps at fullback, but what do you think ends up happening there? Do you think it's Gilliam?
Well, I want to even know if he's going to be active, because are you going to have four tight ends active? Because that's what they have on the roster right now, right? So maybe, but that's what's intriguing to me as well. Right now at tight end, you have Dawson Knox, Tyler Croft, Lee Smith, Reggie Gilliam. Are all four of those guys? Now, you could justify it by saying, sure, you can, because you don't have a fullback, right? Mm-hmm. No doubt. But then you also still have Tywan Jones as a running back. I mean, obviously, he's dealing with an injury. But a lot of the numbers there, and then, you know, TJ Yeldon. So how does the running back slash tight end position even shake out as far as numbers? I don't think you can have all these guys active. It just doesn't suit, you know, the roster you're trying to put together on game day. So let's just say he is, though, and let's just talk long term what they're going to do. I'm intrigued. I don't know if they'll have a person actually line up in I formation as a traditional fullback this year at all. Maybe they will. And if they do, it might be Reggie Gilliam. It could be Lee Smith, who could just run straight ahead and plow into somebody and yep. You know, try to get a hole open up there. I think what we're going to see, though, based on I'm basing this on a couple things. Number one, they played so much 11 personnel last year, which is one running back, one tight end. That means three wide receivers. They spread the field a lot. All right. They did a lot last year. Second half of the year, I think the Bills had the most 11 personnel, or second most in the entire league. All right, so you think about that. They were successful with that, I think. And then you think about them not having a true fullback on the roster this year and going with all these tight ends. I think we're going to see more of like a lot of H-back type of stuff. You know, we're going to see these guys like even Knox, even Croft, but of course Lee Smith, Reggie Gilliam. I think what we're going to see is not standing in front of Devin Singletary or Zach Moss. I think we're going to see them more of an H-back type of role, where they can still go out for passes, they can still get into the hole and, you know, make a block and things like that. I think that seems to be, at least judging from what I just said from last year and how they ran 11 personnel and how they've shaped this roster, that might be what we're looking at.
In terms of active versus inactive tomorrow, I know you spent time on the afternoon show on Friday, actually, yesterday. You guys were talking about whether Gabe Davis could find himself inactive, and it'll be interesting to see what they do at wide receiver. Defensive end, are we just expecting them to dress five, or do we think that one of them would be inactive?
I think you might find one of them inactive as well. I mean, but the thing that gives me pause on that is it is early in the season, and even, you know, Leslie Frazier said to us, hey, you know, we got to be mindful of these guys and reps and rotation, because it's early in the season. They haven't had the ramp up period, the conditioning, it is warmer, even though it might be raining. It's going to be warmer. So you wonder, okay, maybe in a normal game situation, you're just going to go with the 4D tackles, 4D ends. But you might want that because of the rotation and needing to make sure you have enough guys available. And that includes Darryl Johnson. Now, he would be the fifth one, I would think, you know, at defensive end, obviously. And then, or even AJ Epinesa, I guess you could count him in there, because you already have, you know, Hughes, Addison, and Murphy are going to play. But then you also have the injury to Vernon Butler. Now, granted, he is going to play, but he's been dealing with a hamstring. So maybe you have to keep yourself available of having an extra defensive lineman just in case, because we know the Bills do have flexibility there and they can move guys inside and outside. As far as, you know, Gabe Davis, I do wonder, I mean, are you going to activate six wide receivers? And if you do, because you're counting Andre Roberts there, and I'm sure he's going to be active as a return man, does that include now, do you do Isaiah McKenzie and Gabriel Davis? I think it's interesting. The one thing that does help this year, so people know, there is an extra active spot for everyone. They've gone from 46 to 47. And if you activate eight offensive linemen, you get an extra spot to make 48. So basically the extra guy is an offensive lineman. I think the Bills and all teams should do that.
Yep.
So we're really only talking about five inactive players if you're going with 53. They also could call up two guys from the practice squad today by 4 p.m., and they are allowed to have 55 guys on the overall active-inactive list.
All right, and finally, Sale, before I let you go, let's get to the Jets a little bit here. Darnold throwing to, I mean, the story of this game maybe for the Jets is just that, who is he throwing to? Chris Hogan is probably going to start on the outside. I mean, probably. They only have two outside receivers that are currently healthy. I guess they could put Jameson Crowder or Braxton Berrios on the outside, but they have always been slot receivers when they've been in game action. Like, Sale, like, Josh Norman's not playing in this game, but I'm not sure how big a deal that is anyway with Levi Wallace. Who's to say Norman would have started anyway? But, I mean, like, Tre'Davious White, like, this is not one of those games, I should just say, where who's Tre'Davious White shadowing? Because I don't really think, it doesn't sound like it matters.
I agree with you. I think this is the kind of game where you probably just say, okay, we're going to keep Trey on the left and Levi on the right. And then if something happens during the game, you start to adjust. Now, that said, do you think maybe putting Tre'Davious White on even Chris Herndon? Remember, against the Eagles last year, they did have him on Zach Ertz for a little while, right? I mean, he shadowed Zach Ertz pretty much on several situations. Yep. So I wonder if that's something they even think about doing. Like, that's really, to me, Darnold's biggest threat right now. Now, granted, I'm not taking anything away from Perryman. He had a fantastic, you know, run of last year, last month or second half, whatever it was. He was a former first-round pick. So I think he's a talented player, but I think he'd have to kind of prove it before you make them go that route. And maybe they do, but I do agree with you that they are in a really tough situation with their receivers. And, you know, the guys, I did some numbers today. I was actually going through last year's. I went through last year's Jets opening day roster against the Bills, and the only two receivers still on the team are Braxton Berrios and Jameson Crowder. Everybody else is different. You know, so you think about the chemistry there. Yeah, they've had a month of practice now, but, you know, who knows what the chemistry is and the communication and all of that. So the Bills have an opportunity here. I think that's the bottom line, right, Joe, which is, you know, to me, they should be able to just get out there, cause some confusion with their fronts, do some things to the offensive line to cause them to have to communicate in ways they haven't yet. And then same goes maybe on the outside with their receivers working with Sam Darnold for the first time.
And finally, Sal, is there one game around the league that's not Bills-Jets that the result interests you the most? Miami-New England, maybe, is that just for the Patriots? I don't know. Do you have a game in mind that interests you the most?
For result, that's the game. The game that interests me for result is Miami-New England. I'm very curious about what Miami is. I'm very curious about what New England is. There's been a lot of talk about both teams, which you can go either way on. But if I had to watch one game, it would be Buccaneers-Saints.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on. Tom Brady, Drew Brees, everything the Buccaneers did. I have the Saints winning the Super Bowl this year, by the way.
Yep.
You know, so to me, if I could, like, sit and watch one game, by the way, it's at 425, so I might be able to, but that's the game to watch. But I think the result for me that I'm super curious on is Dolphins-Patriots.
In fact, I'm glad, real quick, you mentioned your predictions there that we both did for Radio.com. You had the Saints over the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. I noticed you had the Broncos in the playoffs, which I don't think many, almost any other people that did predictions for that article had in the postseason. Or does that make you a Drew Lock guy? Is it a Drew Lock thing for you, or you just like the roster overall?
It is not. I really like their roster. Yeah. I actually like the way they played last year. They came to Buffalo. They did not look good, right? But I mean, they were.
Brandon Allen,
I think, played that game, right? So, I thought they played really well at times last year. And you have to remember, I also made this pick before the Von Miller injury, and maybe it would change. Here's what I did. I toyed with Denver and Cleveland for that last wild card spot. I finally went with Denver. But you know what, Joe? I mean, you're a fantasy guy. Think about the guys they have, right? I mean, Cortland Sutton now paired with Jerry Jeudy. Noah Fant, to me, is going to be a really good tight end.
Yep.
You know, they signed Melvin Gordon. I'm not a huge Melvin Gordon guy right now, but that's going to be a nice combination in the backfield with them, with Lindsey, right? Lindsey's still there, I believe. That's the guy.
Yes.
And like, I think their defense, you know, Jarrell Casey signed on the defense to help out the defensive line. I have Denver getting into a wild card. They're in a tough division with Kansas City, obviously. If another team is to do it without Denver, because maybe the Von Miller injury hurts them too much, I would probably go with Cleveland.
Yeah. I like the Denver pick. And you mentioned it, like some of the fantasy guys, like Jerry Jeudy, I mean, sky's the limit. Maybe not for his rookie season, because rookie receivers generally take a little bit to get going, but maybe not, because all indications in training camp is that he's been phenomenal. And now that Cortland Sutton is hurt, I mean, he's probably going to see a huge target share coming his way for the beginning of the season. So
yeah, Sutton, is Sutton out, or is he
they practice today.
Oh,
so I don't think
that's
an injury designation, but the last I saw from their head coach was that he could practice today limited. So I don't think we don't know yet. that's why, you know, fantasy players on Monday have a backup plan, because he just got hurt, and if it's a labrum injury, or no, AC joint, it's an AC joint, so he's probably going to try to play through it, but we don't really know at this point.
You asked, you've been asking for predictions. I know you said you were going to get mine, and so I'll give it to you before we go, in case we forget. So in case people didn't read my article, it's up, all my predictions at WGR550.com. I have a overall predictions column. I even include all the award winners. I have Sean McDermott actually winning coach of the year, because I have the Bills winning the AFC East. I'll say they win 10 games. Maybe that last game against Miami doesn't, you know, mean that much, but I think they can win 11. I think it's 10 or 11, somewhere in there. I have them winning the AFC East, hosting a playoff game, and I have them going to the AFC Championship game, losing to the Chiefs, and then the Chiefs losing in the Super Bowl to the New Orleans Saints. Also, Max tomorrow, I asked him before I went on the air, he said Bills 20-15. That was his pick.
20-15. How are the Jets getting? I need to figure out how the Jets are getting to 15. Maybe I'll start the Jets kicker tomorrow, because that sounds like field goals. That's pretty good.
I don't know. Maybe maybe you get a 2-point conversion in there somewhere. But Max says 20-15, so mark that down.
All right, 20-15 from Max. All right, thanks, Sal. We'll talk a little bit tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. We will talk with him tomorrow on the pregame show. Myself and Nate Geary will get things going at 10 o'clock. More time for your calls, though, on the way next. We have Mike Dempsey coming up to talk some fantasy in about 10 to 15 minutes, so we got a little time for you before then. Sports Talk Saturday, Joe DiBiase, Corey Griswold running things here on WGR.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Joe DiBiase, Corey Griswold hanging out here. 24 hours, 25 minutes until Bills versus Jets. We're there. We're finally there. It stinks. Sal mentioned it right at the top when he joined me in the last segment that fans will not get to go. But, I mean, we could have had no football at all. We really could have. And to have the game tomorrow and to be able to watch it on TV, it's not all the way normal, of course, but some sort of normalcy is good. And it's so good to have football back and to have sports back in general. Every sport's back at this point. I'm stunned that every sport is back. Like, even baseball came back and had all the issues at the beginning with COVID, and I cannot believe that they were able to manage it and get through it with not being in a bubble. But it seems like it's going pretty well so far. 803-0550 is the phone number. We're taking calls on Bill's predictions. We had a 12-4 come in while we were talking to Sal, and we've got John in Rochester who's been hanging on hold. John, what do you got for the Bills in 2020?
Hey, Joe. Hey, man. 11-5. I'll tell you, I think Allen, this is going to be the base for his Hall of Fame election in about 10, 12 years. I'll tell you why. This guy and this team kind of reminds me of Terry Bradshaw and the Steelers back in the 70s. And this is the capability that Allen has. I think this season he will start on a Hall of Fame career. I think he's going to explode. Look at the weapons they got. And you know, another thing, you know, we've got Singletary and Moss. They're going to be our chief guys on the running attack. But I think the guys that aren't getting credit are Yeldon and Tywan Jones. Those two guys are tremendous backs, and I think they're going to contribute a lot. They're going to be like the Rocky Blyers of the Buffalo Bills in 2020 and 21. But and look at our wide receivers, man. Yep. Brown and Beasley. I'm pumped up. Pumped up.
Yeah. John, thanks for the call, man. 11 and 5. All right. Is that that's our first 11. It's pretty crazy. That's within their within the framework of what could happen this year. So 11-5 is not crazy. 12-4 with that schedule, I'm going to struggle to get to. But if this division is as bad as it could be, and that would take New England taking a step back, and it would take Miami plateauing, and the Jets taking a step back, this division could be easy. They could go 5-1 in it, maybe even 6-0. But that's what it would take for me to get them to 11 or 12, the division. 803-0550 is the phone number. Quick news. We have a couple of big contract extensions in the NFL. Dalvin Cook of the Vikings and Alvin Kamara, both running backs, Kamara of the Saints, signing five-year extensions. Kamara, $75 million. Cook, $68 million. So if you're thinking about them as free agent running backs going into next year, which they were part of a long list that was going to be on there, they're no longer available. 803-0550 is the phone number for your calls. We'll take a timeout here. We'll talk some fantasy and some Jacksonville Jaguars as well. The tanking Jaguars with Mike Dempsey after this on WGR. Rolling along here, Sports Talk Saturday. Joe DiBiase, Corey Griswold hanging out as well. Just over 24 hours away from Bills versus Jets. Myself and Nate Geary will be taking you through the pregame show, getting things going at 10 a.m. We'll go around the league a little bit here, talk some fantasy, also some Jaguars. Mike Dempsey, 10 a.m. in Jacksonville, Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio, NFL Radio as well. Mike, it's Joe in Buffalo. How are you doing, man?
Hey, Joe. What's going on, buddy?
We are set. I'm setting lineups is what I'm doing. I'm going through. I've got eight leagues. I know you've been on with Shope and the Bulldog a lot. And Mike, of course, has like triple probably what I do. How many leagues are you in this year?
Leagues in which I have to set a lineup, I'm in 16. Okay. So got a lot of best ball teams as well that you automatically get your best lineup that week.
Best ball is definitely the way to go. I'm finding that more and more over the past couple of years. Takeaways from Thursday before we get into some Jaguars, let's talk some fantasy. Mecole Hardman doesn't play. Brandon Cooks didn't have a great game. But otherwise, Mike, my takeaway from Thursday might be, unless you had Cooks or Hardman, anyone that started anyone probably did pretty well.
Yeah, they all did. I mean, all the guys we wanted to come through or expected to come through for us. You know, Deshaun Watson saved it at the end with that rushing touchdown. It was not a great night for him whatsoever, but he did give you the fantasy points you wanted. Will Fuller is obviously going to be his most heavily targeted receiver, and a lot of people are taking him as early as the fifth round, sixth round, certainly. And David Johnson came through in a big way, and then the big four for Kansas City, plus Sammy Watkins, who not everyone is going to play, but apparently Sammy Watkins loves week one. He scored three touchdowns last year. So, everybody pretty much gave you what you wanted on Thursday night.
And in terms of this upcoming weekend, before actually we get into the weekend, there were two running backs that I mentioned in the last segment that signed extensions, Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara. I'm wondering, fantasy-wise, behind Cook, Alex Mattison is someone I've been stashing in dynasty leagues, hoping that there would be contract turmoil with Dalvin Cook. Uh-huh. And there was a little bit this week, too. Kareem Hunt signed an extension with Cleveland. And quickly, what was looking to be an incredibly interesting offseason next year at the running back position, Mike, guys are signing, and I think that gives you more clarity in terms of what fantasy will look like for next year.
Yeah, you'll have Leonard Fournette kicking around. next year that he's going to be a free agent. You know, but with Madison, I think, you know, you just hold on to him at this point, a guy like that. And, you know, you see if something develops, he's still a high-profile handcuff. A lot of people were taking him as high as, like, the eighth, ninth round, certainly, this year. Even if they didn't own Dalvin Cook, on the chance that, you know, if Cook misses any time, you've got a pretty productive back there. But now, you know, you're going to have to decide, is he worth it like Michael the Burner Turner was years ago when he was behind LT and a few dynasty owners held on to him for 4 years and he paid off big dividends. So that's a long time to wait for impatient fantasy owners.
Yep. How about on the Bills, Mike? We got the Jets tomorrow. The matchup is an interesting one in terms of like what the game script is going to look like. If they're ahead early, we could see a lot of, well, we don't really know. It could be a lot of Devin Singletary. It could be a lot of Zach Moss. It could be a split. And I've felt cautious to play either one of them. How would you look at the Bills' backfield as fantasy options for tomorrow?
You know, our boy Mike Shope there kind of really skewed my perspective on this. I talked to him about a month ago about this, and he said he was only drafting Zach Moss off Buffalo this year, you know, was really the guy he was targeting. And it got to the point there, Joe, at the end where I just preferred Moss. You could get him cheaper, but given the choice, if I could have one or the other, I'd take Moss over Singletary because I don't think Singletary will get any work inside the 10-yard line. At least, you know, that's my guess, because Josh Allen will carry a few in and Moss will get the rest of the goal line work. And, you know, I mean, we've been hearing that it could be an alternating 1A, 1B each week, depending on what the defensive scheme of the opponent is. And, you know, I know the speculation is this week they may try to go more between the tackles because the Jets, without C.J. Mosley, that may, you know, favor Moss more. I just like Moss better. I have Singletary in several dynasty leagues. I didn't really draft him in redraft leagues this year. It just, you know, the appeal of being maybe the pass catcher, and I think Moss can catch the ball as well, but maybe the pass catcher, maybe the guy in between the 20s. Too kind of, you know, cloudy for me. I just can't get behind it. I'm going with Moss if I'm going with any Bills running back right now.
Mike Dempsey joining me here on the Wester Hotline, host of Jaguars Today on 1010 AM in Jacksonville, as well as Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio and Sirius XM NFL Radio. Before we get into some more fantasy stuff in terms of the Jaguars and then transition to them, one other guy from this matchup tomorrow that's not on the Bills is on the Jets that I have in every single one of my leagues except for one, and that's tight end Chris Herndon. And I've been wanting to be almost talked off of it a little bit because I feel like I'm too heavy on going all in on Herndon, as I think he could finish easily as a top 10 tight end this season. 2018 weeks is, I think it's week 6 through 16, he was tight end 6, and he missed all of last year. And it's in my argument on investing in him so much is that, Mike, tomorrow, the Jets are going to be starting Chris Hogan at wide receiver. Like, they're so thin at the receiver position that I just don't know who Sam Darnold's going to throw the ball to, and I just, Herndon sticks out to me as the one constant there. What's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I like him for the season. I don't love him this week. I think Buffalo does a pretty good job on the tight end, and so I'm not really eager to play Chris Herndon this week, but I own a lot of him as well. I mean, remember last year in the opener, Jameson Crowder caught 14 passes for 99 yards. I think he's going to get a ton of work out of the slot all season long from Sam Darnold. And I think Le'Veon Bell's still going to catch a bunch of passes out of the backfield as well. I do like Herndon, like I said, over the course of the season. But I'm sure, Joe, where you drafted him, likely you didn't have to take him as a top 10 tight end. So
Nope. There's
either probably a good option on the waiver wire for week one or maybe elsewhere on your roster. You know, if you had to go with him, fine. Because I agree with you. I think at the end of the year, we're going to like where his numbers are. I'm just not super keen on this matchup in opening week.
Fair enough. Talking some Jaguars now while we're still in the fantasy realm. Mike, I went for Ezigbo. I went for Divine Ezigbo when Rykel Armstead showed up on the COVID list and Leonard Fournette, of course, was cut. And I have James Robinson is now the running back, it looks like, to own, no?
Correct, yes. I mean, Ezigbo's on IR, so it's going to be at least 3 weeks for him to come back. Armstead the same. And I don't know if those guys are going to be able to catch up with him. Here's the thing, Joe, I have not put an eyeball on James Robinson. My show in Jacksonville is on from 10 to noon, and that's when they practiced, training camp practice, all August. And we used to be out there doing our show at practice, and obviously with COVID-19, things have changed. So I've had to rely on the reports of others. Chris Thompson himself, the Jaguars pass-catching third down back, said that Robinson has the best vision of anybody on the team. I'm sure you heard Jay Gruden say yesterday that we believe he can carry the load. He's earned the job. And week one here, man, he is going to get all the work he can handle. The only other running back on the roster other than he and Thompson is Dari Ogunbowale, who they picked up literally 2 days ago. I don't know how big of a role you can expect him to have. So, I mean, I think if the Jags can keep this close at all, and keep in mind that they've beaten Indy five times in a row in Jacksonville, including week 17 last year. Now, I understand things have changed on both teams. But if they can keep it respectable for a while, I think James Robinson could see 20 touches in this football game. Now, how effective will he be? I'm not sure, but I don't know how many guys you could pick up off the waiver wire in the last week before the season that can get, you know, 15-plus touches at the running back position.
How much do you think he could have played into Leonard Fournette being released? Like, do you think if Robinson or the other running backs hadn't showed to be capable of carrying the workload that they would have kept Fournette?
I do think that. Now, don't get me wrong. I think that they had reasons, you know, that Leonard Fournette had grown on their last nerve over the years, and that played a role in it. I know Doug Marrone said specifically that this was strictly a football decision. I frankly don't believe that. You know, I believe that his backstory, if he had been a model citizen team guy the whole way, I think he would have been given a lot more rope to stay on the squad. And he ran as the first team tailback Fournette did right up until when he got cut. So hard to say he was getting pushed out of the job, but I do think, you know, I've heard good things about Robinson since they picked him up as an undrafted free agent, but he really did impress them. And I, you know, they couldn't anticipate, I think, Armstead going back on the COVID-19 list and then Ezigbo going on IR. And I even said that when they released him. Why did they do this on a Monday when they've got the rest of the week to see what happens at that position? What if they suffer an injury? Now, some of that stuff happened post-cutdown day. But, yeah, I do think Robinson's performance did factor into it, but I think it was a combination of factors with Fournette going.
And finally, on the Jaguars, Mike, they seem to be from the outside going into a rebuild, a tank, however you want to label it, trading safety Ronnie Harrison away, trading Yannick Ngakoue away, letting Leonard Fournette go. Now, all of those could be different situations, and it could just be coincidental, I think, that they're trading these players that have started games for them and have been starters. But is it fair to label them as a team that is bottoming out and is gunning for a quarterback next season?
Certainly. I mean, I'm not crazy, right? Like, I see what's happening like everybody else does. But I do know that, at least from Doug Marrone's perspective, I mean, the guy has won 11 games in the last 2 years. I don't know how many hall passes you get from the owner at the end of the season who continues to say that's not going to be good enough the next time and then brings back the GM and the coach. So, you know, the sense from some of us in the Jacksonville media is that Dave Caldwell has been told that get the salary cap in order, strip it down. If you can win with Gardner, great. We're going to be loaded with draft picks to surround him with. If not, we're going to be in position to make a run at one of the top quarterbacks. So each one is an individual situation, by the way. I mean, unique. They wanted to keep him. They offered him $19 million a year, 18-plus incentives last year. He didn't like it. Talks broke down. He swore he'd never play for them again. They got what they could. Ronnie Harrison was getting beat out regardless, and he's been a guy who's got a lot of kind of immature-type penalties, unsportsmanlike conduct-type stuff. So each situation on its own, you can look at and understand the reasons. Collectively, it's hard not to say that they're stripping things down to the studs, going as young as they can and seeing where the chips fall.
Selfish question here, because I just got a trade offer a couple of hours ago in a super flex dynasty league. Someone offered me Dwayne Haskins for Gardner Minshew straight up. What would you do there?
Boy, that's tough. I'd probably take Haskins, to be honest with you. It's really hard because I think Minshew's going to be better than Haskins this year. Yeah. And you might just bank on that. You know, if you need him this year, I might just hang on to him. But I think, even though it's not Ron Rivera and company that invested in Haskins, the investment that Washington made in him is much larger. And like you said, you know, this is make or break for Minshew. He's going to have to win enough games to convince them that he's the guy. That is really, really close. Put it this way, if you're not sure about either's long-term mm-hmm. future, I think Minshew's going to have a better fantasy year this year, so maybe you want to hang on. If you're really playing the long game, I would think it's maybe a 60-40 bet on Haskins.
I might go Haskins. That's not a team that I'm very confident in being good this season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would come down to me who's more likely to be their team starting quarterback next season.
You know, quite frankly, you should be able to get a throw-in on that, because if the team trying to acquire Minshew thinks he's going to be better this year, you probably can get a rookie draft pick coming coming back.
And I think that's what this team is doing. So I think I'll probably try to get a throw in there. Mike, thanks for joining me for a few minutes here. Always appreciate it, and enjoy football tomorrow.
Anytime, Joe. Thank you.
Mike Dempsey, 10:10 a.m. in Jacksonville. You could follow him on Twitter at MD_1010XL. Mike Dempsey wasn't available, apparently, at Mike Dempsey. You know. But it's all right.
He's got the station in there.
He's got the station in there, right? That's what you need. That's what you need. You know, initials, where you're from.
Now, it gets complicated if you move. If you move, it gets complicated.
That's true. But I'd imagine that, you know, MD_ whatever your call line or your station letters are, it's probably available, you know? I don't know. All right, Haskins for Minshew. That's a trade I got. Does that mean I'm in too many leagues or that league is too deep that you have to consider a trade like that? Because those are two quarterbacks that if most people in fantasy would never even think about being on their teams. Maybe Minshew I would advise people this year to have. That team is going to be bad. Probably they're going to be playing catch up. That doesn't always have to work, but Minshew showed last year he's competent enough that if they're trailing a lot, he's going to put up numbers.
I don't know, man. It's about trusting the coaches, right? Like, do I trust to have the quarterback of Doug Marrone? If he's going to even be there, how long is Doug Marrone going to be there, right? Like, do they make him walk the plank?
I know. But if it's only for this year, Minshew, I think, will put up numbers because last year he started 12 games, 3,271 yards, 21 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. That's more volume in passing than Josh Allen put up in 4 less games. And I'm not saying he's better than Josh Allen, but it's one, how bad the team is and how much they might have to pass the ball. And two, you make a good point about Marrone. The problem is, though, they don't have another quarterback they would ever go to.
That's true.
Jake Luton, 6th-round pick, I think,
is their
backup.
Do they have the same offensive coordinator?
Jay Gruden. No, Jay Gruden just got there. So does that make you more or less confident that he's going to put up numbers this year?
That's a wild coaching room.
Jay Gruden and Doug Marrone?
Oh, my God.
Can I be a fly on the wall in that room?
Sports radio in Jacksonville is going to be cooking. It's going to be great.
Trevor Lawrence might be the quarterback next year, though. So.
Oh, my God.
Trevor Lawrence, Doug Marrone, and Jay Gruden. That would be fun.
Poor kid.
Yeah. 803-0550 is the phone number. Back to Bills predictions. Back to Bills versus Jets when we return. Give us a call. How many predictions have we got in right now? We got like 10. 10, 11, 10, 12, 9, 9.5, and 12 are the ones I have written down here. I think we had a couple other 10s as well. Feel free to throw it to me on Twitter, too, at SneakyJoeWGR. Although we're not counting that towards our final total. Just saying that. And we're not going to get to 50. I told you, Corey. We had too many guests this hour. It's my fault.
We gave it a try.
I know. If I really wanted to go all in, I could have. All right, 803-0550 is the number. Your call's next here on WGR.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.